Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we go from Hemingway Zero to Hemingway Hero in 16 books flat. Today we are discussing Chapter 3, and then we'll be reading Chapter 4. The questions I asked the community were these. Why do you think Scully took this moment to tell the Swede about his daughter and son? What do you reckon the Swede has in his great valise? And in yesterday's conversation, many of us speculated that we are reading a horror or a murder mystery. If that's the case, who do you reckon is the murderer? JMama8779 said, okay, this one was a bit slower than the last two. The Swede seems to have something very important in his possession, something that people would want to kill him for. At this time, it reminds me a little of the briefcase in Pulp Fiction, if anyone else is familiar with it. I think he's shown the family to make him more at ease. So you think Scully has shown his family to calm his own nerves? Maybe? Or to calm the nerves of the Swede? The whiskey seems to be a token of good faith, too, as well as to help calm the nerves. As we see, though, his eyes still burn with hatred. Don't know if I can wait till tomorrow to read on, to be honest. Yeah, it was one where this story is moving at a good pace. It's making me want to keep reading forward. Techrific said, at this time, it reminds me of the briefcase of Pulp Fiction. Yeah, I think that's what user Gravel on Mud alluded to on in the previous chapter. It seems plausible that the Swede is carrying his life savings in his valise if he's moving out west. Huh. And also, Techrific said, I hear you on that. I'm tempted to keep reading too. Damn, this is good. Agreed. Gravel on Mud said, I'm going to go out on a limb and suggest that the hotel itself may be the protagonist in a sort of haunting of House Hill fashion. There are just so many times that the narrator seems to give a demonic life to the hotel. For example, I mentioned earlier the hotel is screaming and howling in the second sentence of the book. Or The Shining, Here's Johnny. Happy birthday, Ben, said. I've gotten a lot of Tarantino vibes from these first three chapters. The Swede is like an unhinged and even crazier Christopher Waltz character. The emphasis on the valise reminds me of the briefcase in Pulp Fiction. Others have mentioned, and the first scenes in the hotel aren't too far from The Hateful Eight. Planning for Burial said, I've been totally also picturing Christopher Waltz as the Swede. This is a lot of Tarantino / Wes Anderson vibes to me. Techrific said, I found the change from an objective narrator to a subjective, if not downright unreliable, narrator really interesting. When the Swede is upstairs and turns around, when Scully arrives, the entire description of what he sees in Scully's face is psychologically from the Swede's troubled perspective. In the narrow yellow light of the small lamp, the troubled Swede sees a murderer. Really cool shift from strict realism into something more expressive and subjective. Right way up said that line, that he looked like a murderer, really stood out. Maybe I'm overthinking it, but it seemed like the least subtle red herring I've ever seen. Techrific said, maybe not. If it's just from the Swede's fevered thinking, it's just his paranoia doing its work. But if we believe it from an objective narrator's perspective, it could be a red herring or a sinister on-the-nose foreshadowing of deeds to come. I still believe Crane is trying out a new way of writing here. It has the hallmark of an unreliable narrator, or at least a shift of perspective similar to the one in The Open Boat, with the folks on the shore behaving utterly perplexing to the crew in the boat. JMama8779 said, good call, I think the shift to subjective makes the reader feel more frantic and uneasy, just like the characters in the story. Gravel on Mud agreed, that is a fantastic moment. I love the narrator's use of, for instance, when noting that Scully's eyes were mysteriously shadowed. It's as if other things were also in mysterious shadow, but for no particular reason, The narrator just happened to point out the eyes. I feel like the narrator has been doing this all along. For example, the palace hotel is screaming and howling. In the second sentence of the book, later the stove humming with godlike violence. And a gatepost is like a still man with a blanched face. Techrific said yes. It's weird and wonderful. It's like a painting by Edward Munch or something. Right Way Up said, it made me think of people in the movies who are held at gunpoint. I think they mention their kids so the armed person doesn't kill them. But here I think it is just something he does to distract the Swede. Maybe also to convey that he has encountered death with the loss of his daughter. I thought about alcohol, seeing how greedily he took the bottle of whiskey that was offered. But I guess the whiskey was more there to show that he needed to calm his nerves, and the reason for his anxiety was the content of his valise. So maybe there is some stolen goods there. Perhaps the previous owner is dead because of the Swede's actions. I guess I have to go with the Swede, but that is from before their arrival at the Blue Hotel. Oh, as the murderer. That's Right Way Up's guess at who the murderer is. If there is going to be a murder at the hotel, I can't guess who yet. But the Swede will be the victim because of the contents of his valise. Aha, so you think the Swede will be the victim, but who done it? That's the question. Techrific said, that's very interesting. I didn't think of that. Guilt can certainly make a person paranoid, and if one is a murderer, maybe even around you, everyone around you, seems like potential murderers too. All a hammer sees is nails. Swim said, the mama fishy said, I believe the Swede thought he was being forced to drink poisoned whiskey. I had the same thought, and I really thought, as Scully was retrieving the whiskey, that it was going to be a gun of some description. I don't know why, because I think it was hidden under the bed. You know, they mentioned hiding it from his children. So I knew it was something, illicit in some nature. And it was wrapped up in a jacket, and I don't know. I thought he was going to give him a gun as, like, to make him feel more secure because he was paranoid that someone was going to kill him. Which would have been insane. It wouldn't have made sense, really, but that's just what I thought was coming. Levi619 said, I'm enjoying how Crane describes everything. Usually he states the nature of the thing in general, then adds, including but not limiting to a specific detail, that reinforces the feeling the nature gives. Those statements are meant to be agreed with and expanded upon with your own experience. It is refreshingly different from other styles that dictate every small detail. I can't wait to read for tomorrow. Laura Y. Stitch said, after this chapter, I have even less of an idea of what's going on. The Swede seems suspicious of the whiskey, but then he drank it anyway, and with hate in his eyes. I'm not sure if this is a murder mystery or just paranoia, which could end up being self-fulfilling prophecy. And Wasm said, the Swede is terrified of being killed and wants to leave the hotel. Well, coming out of nowhere, sure, I get it. But when Scully tells him to follow and the Swede thinks he is about to be killed, he meekly follows. Wondering why that is. Maybe just feeling hopeless? I'm also wondering if the glance burning with horror is due to mistrust of Scully, or if there's something still more going on with the Swede. I am very comfortably confused in this story. Like, we're at a good point in the story to be this confused. I think it's really well done. We're 3 chapters in. The plot is building. There's been some very intriguing moments, but a lot of questions raised and very few answers, which is kind of what you want to do as you introduce a story, is intrigue the reader and make them want to read ahead. I think we should move on now, and let's start chapter 4. So, here we go, Stephen Crane's The Blue Hotel, chapter 4. After the departure of Scully, the 3 men, with the cardboard still upon their knees, preserved for a long time an astounded silence. Then Johnny said, That's the goddamnedest Swede I ever saw. He ain't no Swede, said the cowboy scornfully. Well, what is he then? Cried Johnny. What is he then? It's my opinion, replied the cowboy delicately. He's some kind of a Dutchman. It was a venerable custom of the country to entitle as Swedes all light-haired men who spoke with a heavy tongue. In consequence, the idea of the cowboy was not without its daring. Yes, sir, he repeated, it's my opinion this fellow is some kind of a Dutchman. Well, he says he's a Swede, anyhow, muttered Johnny sulkily. He turned to the Easterner. What do you think, Mr. Blunk? Oh, I don't know, replied the Easterner. Well, what do you think makes him act that way? Asked the cowboy. Why, he's frightened. The Easterner knocked his pipe against a rim of the stove. He's clear frightened out of his boots. What at? Cried Johnny and the cowboy together. The Easterner reflected over his answer. What at? Cried the other again. Oh, I don't know, but it seems to me this man has been reading dime novels and he thinks he's right out in the middle of it, the shooting and the stabbing and all. But, said the cowboy, deeply scandalized, this ain't Wyoming, nor none of them places. This is Nebraska. Yes, added Johnny, and why don't he wait till he gets out west? The travelled Easterner laughed. It isn't different there, even. Not in these days. But he thinks he's right in the middle of hell. Johnny and the cowboy mused long. It's awful funny, remarked Johnny at last. Yes, said the cowboy. This is a queer game. I hope we don't get snowed in, because then we'd have to stand this here man being around with us all the time. That wouldn't be no good. I wish Pop would throw him out, said Johnny. Presently they heard a loud stamping on the stairs, accompanied by ringing jokes in the voice of old Scully and laughter, evidently from the Swede. The men around the stove stared vacantly at each other. Gosh, said the cowboy. The door flew open and old Scully, flushed and anecdotal, came into the room. He was jabbering at the Swede, who followed him, laughing bravely. It was the entry of the two roisterers from the banquet hall. Come now, said Scully sharply to the three seated men, move up and give us a chance at the stove. The cowboy and the Easterner obediently sidled their chairs to make room for the newcomers. Johnny, however, simply arranged himself in a more indolent attitude, and then remained motionless. Come, get over there, said Scully. Plenty of room on the other side of the stove, said Johnny. Do you think we want to sit in a draught? Roared the father. But the Swede here interposed with a grandeur of confidence. No, no, let the boy sit where he likes, he cried in a bullying voice to the father. All right, said Scully, deferentially. The cowboy and the Easterner glanced, exchanged glances of wonder. The five chairs were formed in a crescent about one side of the stove. The Swede began to talk. He talked arrogantly, profanely, angrily. Johnny, the cowboy, and the Easterner maintained a morose silence, while old Scully appeared to be receptive and eager, breaking in constantly with sympathetic ejaculations. Finally, the Swede announced that he was thirsty. He moved in his chair and said that he would go for a drink of water. I'll get it for you, cried Scully at once. No, said the Swede contemptuously, I'll get it for myself. He arose and stalked with the air of an owner off into the executive parts of the hotel. As soon as the Swede was out of hearing, Scully sprang to his feet and whispered intensely to the others. Upstairs he thought I was trying to poison him. Say, said Johnny, this makes me sick. Why don't you throw him out in the snow? Why, he's all right now, declared Scully. It was only that he was from the east and he thought this was a tough place, that's all. He's all right now. The cowboy looked with admiration upon the Easterner. You were straight, he said. You were onto that there Dutchman. Well, said Johnny to his father, he may be all right now, but I don't see it. Other time he was scared, but now he's too fresh. Scully's speech was always a combination of Irish brogue and idiom, Western twang and idiom, and scraps of curiously formal diction taken from the storybooks and newspapers. He now hurled a strange mass of language at the head of his son. What do I keep? What do I keep? What do I keep? He demanded in a voice of thunder. He slapped his knee impressively to indicate that he himself was going to make reply, and that all should heed. I keep a hotel, he shouted. A hotel, do you mind? A guest under my roof has sacred privileges. He is to be intimidated by none. Not one word shall he hear. That would prejudice him in favour of going away. I'll not have it. There's no place in this here town where they can say they ever took in a guest of mine because he was afraid to stay here. He wheeled suddenly upon the cowboy and the Easterner. Am I right? Yes, Mr. Scully, said the cowboy. I think you're right. Yes, Mr. Scully, said the Easterner. I think you're right. All right, there we go. That was chapter 4. The, things are developing, you know, in a weird way. The Swede now seems to be supremely confident. He's like a pendulum swinging from one extreme to the other. All right, have your say about this chapter at the subreddit, reddit.com/r/thehemingwaylist. Join the discussion about chapter 4. Just a quick thank you to the Patreon supporters of this podcast. If you would like to support, you can go to patreon.com/thehemingwaylist. All right, that's going to do us for today. Thank you very much for listening, and I will see you tomorrow.